Bad news.
Bad news for the state.
Bad news for capital.
Bad news for patriarchy.
Bad news for all forms of domination.
Bad news. Angry voices from around the world.
Our monthly info show from anarchist and anti-authoritarian radio projects worldwide.
If these news are bad, I don't want to be good.
On the 15th of every month, you'll be able to find on our website a-radio-network.org the latest issue of Bad News.
You know, things are really bad right now. Everywhere.
You've gone down in the dark where none is welcome.
So this will be quite a depressing show.
Not necessarily.
This is Bad News number 4, put together by Radio Pirata, from Valparaíso, territory dominated by the state of Chile. We keep asking here, between the Pacific Ocean and the Andes Mountains, where is Santiago Maldonado?
During this show, we will listen to information provided by the comrades of 98 FM from Athens, 105 FM from Lesbos, Radio Curruf from Gualmapu, Rosas Negras from El Salvador, a radio from Berlin, Dissident Iceland from UK,
and last but not least, the final straw from the so-called USA.
Bad news.
Radio zones of subversive expression.
Attack on the French Institute in Athens. Anarchists attack the French Institute, which is located in one of the most expensive areas of the city center, with paint bottles. In their text, the anarchists stated that the visit of Macron and his fellow businessmen is an omen of a rich oligarchy who will try to buy public water supplies, structures, services and many more public goods. They also note the involvement of France in many conflicts and bombings in the Middle East. 4 years after Pavlos Fissas' death. 4 years ago, Pavlos Fissas was murdered because he stood up to members of the Golden Dawn, the neo-Nazi party of Greece, and while he was trying to protect his friends and fight back to multiple neo-Nazis, a hitman of the fascist organization stabbed him. Pavlos Fissas was a well-known anti-fascist member of the Keratsini community and a political rapper activist. Every year, anti-fascist demonstrations and concerts on his memory are holding place, not only in Athens, but statewide. Squad of the government-favored newspaper Avgi. On September 3rd, a group of anarchists squatted for a few hours the headquarters of the newspaper Avgi, which is government-oriented, or if you would like, government propaganda. The anarchists did the squat in solidarity to Panayoti Zed, who was arrested a few weeks ago and is accused of arsoning. In their text, they claim that the media have played a major role in the accusement of their comrade.
Workers' news. A significant growth of workplace accidents, 15%, was noted during the first trimester of 2017, according to labor inspectors. They also underline the alarming increase of workplace accidents since the early days of the crisis, namely before 2013. The link was clearly shown between these accidents and the deterioration of work conditions, as well as the lowering of fundings about security measures in the workplace, with the aim of cost reductions by the employers. there is a 10% growth of workplace accidents for every year of the crisis since 2013. It is very interesting to think that these numbers were and are constantly growing despite the decrease of jobs available due to unemployment. The struggle of surviving while producing profits for the bosses just got trickier, with a daily average of more than 20 workplace accidents per day in Greece. Some of these accidents are fatal. On the 19th of August, a 34-year-old worker in a power plant's mine was plunged by the forklift he was driving. 5 days later, a 22-year-old worker finally died in the intensive care unit, where he was hospitalized for 24 days after an accident in a sewer plant in the province of Laconia. 2 days after this, on the 26th of August, a 44-year-old garbage man was killed by a car while loading the garbage truck. He was one of the garbage men employed with small contracts who went on strike, and his own contract was due only a month after his death. 2 days after, on the 28th, a 47-year-old lumberjack was killed by a tree. His employers, a third-party company, rushed to communicate to the public that all safety measures were respected. The death toll finished only when the month came to an end. On August 30, a garbage woman was run over by the garbage truck she was working on.
Bad News 105 FM, September 2017. Hello, comrades. This is a broadcast of counter-information of the self-organized independent radio station of Mytilene, Lesvos Island, 105 FM. We will inform you about local news from Lesvos and other Aegean islands that occurred during the months of June to September. We will start with some immigration struggles.
Monday, 17th of July. A group of migrants had announced since Monday, 17th of July, that they would start repeatedly protesting the prolonged delays in the examination of their asylum applications, as well as the horrid living conditions they face in the Moria detention center. On Monday, the protest took the form of a sitting demonstration that blockaded the headquarters of the European Asylum Support Office. On Tuesday, while the sitting demonstration resumed, again outside the associate quarter, they once more faced the brutality of the police forces who tried to remove them from the street, chasing them to the inside of the center and using tear gas and stun grenades. On their part, the migrants responded to this attack by throwing rocks, resulting to the initial retreat of the police forces, and to some damage to the cars that were parked around the detention center. Meanwhile, fire had started in order to set up roadblocks. After the clashes, the police shut the center's entrance and started an arresting inside the center. The migrants that were trapped inside faced the menace of the riot police, who even barged inside the containers indiscriminately and frantically, beating anyone they ran into, finally arresting 35 people with skin color as their sole criterion, since lots of African immigrants had been targeted.
Sunday, 30th of June. Here is the statement of hunger striker Aras Hampei. I call for the immediate release from detention of my brother and the three others who are on hunger strike inside the prison in Moria. We demand the Greek Asylum Service and the United Nations hear our voices, which have fallen on deaf ears for too long. The imprisonment of my brother Amir Hampei is a violation of his basic human rights. He has been in prison for 2 months. For what crime? On what legal or ethical basis can you justify arresting and detaining us in this way? Our demand is simple. It is a demand for basic human dignity. We demand you release all the refugees in prison in Lesvos who have not been accused or convicted of any crime. We demand Europe stop keeping refugees in detention.
8th of August. Hussein Kozin and Bahro Zaraz were released after a beatings at the detention center of Moria. The two had stopped their hunger strike from August 1st when police claimed that they are about to let them free from the detention center. After the release, Aras Hanpei also stopped his hunger strike. During the hunger strike of Aras Hanpei, various racist scums were trying to threaten Aras' life and mock him and his fight even by displaying knife to Aras.
Monday, 28th of August, a demonstration has been held from the Moria Detention Center to the center of Mytilene by Afghan immigrants who demand where to speed up the asylum procedure and the end of deportation to Afghanistan. During the long-term stay of immigrants in Safo Square, cops' supervision was ongoing constantly with threats for arrests. Wednesday, 2 of August, an incident on the island of Rhodes with two attacks on immigrants from Bangladesh by four minor fascists. The Nazi scums attack the immigrants, shooting at him and yelling that they are members of Golden Dawn. From 3 till 30 of August, immigrants were identified by port cops in Rhodes Island and southeast of Castellorizo in areas such as the small island of Ro, Megisti and Kremasti. At the same time, 225 immigrants managed to reach the island of Chios on 22 of August. At the same time, another 39 arrived in Molivos at Lesbos Island. More than 5,000 immigrants under the inhuman condition of detention in the secretion camp in Moria. At the same time, on the island of Chios and Samos, about 2,050 immigrants are kept in each island.
On 26 of July, at Rhodes Island, a case of gender violence took place. The woman was double beaten by her ex-husband. Specifically, when he randomly saw her, he grabbed her hair and began to punch through her body, injuring and threatening to kill her. 2 days earlier, as soon as he saw her, he attacked her with a knife and an iron with the intention to kill her. She managed to defend with a decorative sword and she dodged him. Saturday, 26th of August, another incident of gender violence took place on the island of Kalymnos by two adult men and the expulsion of minors for a money fee. The fact that the two defendants come from the wider family circle of victims doesn't come as a surprise to us because the most cases of sexual abuse come from the narrow family circle. And as a result, these cases remain unknown in order not to damage the prestige of institution of Greek family.
Wednesday, 9th of August. Meanwhile, the last 2 months, an LGBTQI plus collective was created by a group consisting of migrants and people in solidarity, and it's about the issues that are faced by the LGBTQI plus immigrants. The group was created because of everyday threats, beatings and violations that LGBTQI plus people are subjected to, both inside the detention center and the city. In such wretched conditions as those that result from the anti-immigration policies, patriarchal and sexist stereotypes become manifest in their most violent form. The group's goals are the empowerment of its members and to announce the danger of the situation they find themselves in because of the authorities.
The state is our enemy, in the south and in the north.
Anarchist International Solidarity.
This is a pirate message from the deep Pacific Ocean.
Anarchist International Solidarity.
Hello, comrades. We are the Angry Voices from Radio Curruf, and we are going to tell you a bad news from Chile.
The threat of natural gas in the Biobío region.
The liquefied natural gas, GNL in Spanish, is destroying the earth since it is taken from United States through the fracking until it reaches its destinations in South America. Behind ideas like progress or clean energy, The gas business has expanded around the world, pretending to become the fossil fuel of the new industry. Chile is proud of being the first country in Latin America with a liquefied natural gas terminal, which works since 2009 in Quintero, a coastal city in the central north zone of the country. Two projects like this are trying to be built, this time in the central south zone, in Biobío region, in two coastal cities very close to Concepción City, GNL Pencolirquén project and GNL Talcahuano project. These maritime terminals were approved by the authorities, but not by the communities, which have organized themselves and have stopped the constructions momently.
Biobío region has a lot of hydroelectric and thermoelectric plants and is one of the main producers of energy in Chile, generating 13,000 gigawatts. It's important to know that only 7,500 gigawatts are destinated to the region, and the 67% of those are used by the industry. So, it's clear that natural gas is not here to fix the supposed energy crisis. This is here to satisfy the big companies.
The liquefied natural gas terminals are important parts of the IIRSA, the Initiative for the Integration of the Infrastructure of the South American Region, because this makes possible the gas exchange between Argentina and Chile and make necessary the construction of a connecting road from the port Bahía Blanca in the Atlantic Ocean to Talcahuano in the Pacific Ocean. These projects disguise themselves as a contribution to the economic development and to the employment, but in fact destroy important natural environments and employment sources, impacting seas, fishing areas, and agricultural lands.
They say that the high level of pollution in the cities is because of the use of firewood, but in reality, the contamination is product of this and also because of activities of energy companies, petrochemistry, metal mechanic, forest and fishery industry, and the forest fires in summer. The business class and the state are trying to ban the use of firewood as a way to press the use of natural gas in homes, telling the people that is cheaper and less polluting.
In Biobío, we don't want GNL with its false progress.
Now, information directly from the Caribbean zone with Rosas Negras from El Salvador.
I think in El Salvador, the journalism is being attacked by the violence. Our country has high levels of violence against the civil society. That includes all the people, from children till older adults. We have too much corruption in the actual government and all the state institutions. So some of the journalists was making investigations about these situations. In this world came to light too much cases about illegal business with people of the government, like drugs traffic, unofficial execution by the soldiers and the police, people traffic, and the journalism profession is being devalued because people in the power has the value to say things against journalists in the public. For example, a journalist from a famous channel was asking the securities ministers about soldiers' murders by gangsters, and he just says, "Perirguiles, let's go to the coffee and I can give you the answers." Obviously, it's a disrespect to the woman, and worse, he totally ignored the question. Some journalists are being threatened for their work, and that threat comes from the gangsters and the police. So we can see that the journalists can be secure. The gangsters and the government need each other. The gangsters attack the journalists' guild directly, and the government pretend give them security.
Sagen Sie jetzt mal bitte,
Nein, hi.
Anarchie.
Anarchia.
Ob geschichtlich oder brandaktuell.
Mit Berichten und Interviews, mit Beiträgen und Collagen
beleuchtet das anarchistische Radio Berlin das Phänomen des Anarchismus.
Viva Anarchia!
Hey there, it's A Radio Berlin, and this month we have some bad news from Germany to share with you. Maybe you heard that the German state banned one of our indie media webpages, the one called Links Unten. This happened on the 25th of August and was accompanied by a few house raids, including a raid on the social center KTS in the city of Freiburg. Following these events, people in different cities took to the streets in solidarity and in protest. So did we. And to explain what's going on with the ban of Links Unten, what it means and how people have been reacting to it, we will share parts of speeches and interviews made in and around these demos and rallies. First off, what actually is Links Unten Indie Media? A speaker in a demo in Freiburg explains.
Links Unten Indie Media existiert seit nunmehr 9 Jahren.
Links Unten Indie Media exists for 9 years as a multilingual independent news portal for the left movements in the southwest of Germany and beyond. On the site, through open posting, people discussed anti-fascist, ecologist, anti-capitalist, feminist, anti-racist, and other topics and social struggles. Besides critical journalism about huge events like the protests against the summits in Hamburg or Strasbourg, it provided information from below, as a platform without commercial interest or that of political parties. Over the years, it became the most important autonomous news portal in the German-speaking areas. No surprise, it was a thorn in the side of the authorities. So the big coordinated raid by the Ministry of Interior is very fitting. It attempts to increase acceptance of an unleashed police state by referencing a so-called supposedly unleashed left extremism after the G20 protests.
Links Unten has been essential for political organizing and for building an alternative public sphere, especially for groups totally excluded by the mainstream. As we can hear from someone from the Prisoners Union, GGBO, in a solidarity march in Berlin.
As a prisoner union, we are fighting for the freedom of speech of incarcerated people for years now, trying to give them a voice. But since the interests of prisoners are being ignored by the commercial media as well as politicians, we as a Berlin solidarity group have been using Links Unten a lot of times to publish protests, initiatives and petitions from the inside, as well as demos and rallies from the outside, but also to scandalize the repressive structures and grievances in the prisons. Links Unten, as an independent and free media platform, has been essential to our work, to publicly inform about the situation in the prisons as well as the interests of the incarcerated.
So, how did this happen? Isn't Germany one of them amazing democracies with a constitution, freedom of expression and press and so on? Well, yes, but the German state kind of found a way to circumvent the problem of acting in this unconstitutional way, like shutting down a website of critical reporting and journalism, by stating that Links Unten would just not be such a website, but actually a website that is run by certain individuals that would make up an association which threatens the constitution itself by planning criminal acts. None of that makes really sense, since there's no association, the content of the website was done by anonymous open postings, and when it came to criminal acts, for the most part, there was reporting on actions that already happened. So how could that qualify as planning for them? This being said, all this sounds really arbitrary, and it isn't unlikely that some court will deem the ban and all the police actions illegal later on. Though it seems like that's not really important for the state, because of different reasons. For one, they were able to continue their repression and search some apartments and Freiburg Social Center, KTS, as a participant of the KTS tells us.
Zeitgleich zu den Durchsuchungen von den Privatwohnungen.
During the raids of the private homes, our social center KTS was searched as well. The cops broke all the locks in the KTS, took all the IT equipment, and they stole all of our money. I see this also in the context of G20, in the debate about autonomous centers, and that for them it was an opportunity to show that they do something against these centers. But I think this should also be a call to found a lot of IMCs and to decentralize it, to be less vulnerable to attacks.
Und das vielleicht auch ein bisschen zu dezentralisieren, um sich weniger angreifbar zu machen.
For sure, decentralizing our media makes a lot of sense. But our friends also points to another aspect of why this is happening. In September, we will have the federal election in Germany, and after the G20 summit and the powerful resistance to it in Hamburg, there's been a lot of talk of the center and right-wing politicians to fight the left wing, especially the autonomous movement. In this context, we can also observe the strategical use of fake news by the police to demonize the autonomous left. With that, it was almost to be expected that the police would claim to have found weapons in the apartments of the so-called operators of Links Unten. A few days later, this false information was retracted. But as the mainstream media works, only the fake news made the headlines. We saw the same during the G20 protests and before in Berlin, when they've evicted the social center Friedel 54, as well as during the struggles in the Riga street. Always claiming that we would use some lethal weapon or method against the police and later disclaiming it. Then there's the aspect of the federal election itself, as well as the campaign of Angela Merkel's party, the CDU, and the aspiring nationalist far-right party, AfD. Not to bore you with the shale taste of the German variety of electoral politics, but the attack on Links Unten happens in an obvious time frame and narrative. And as we can unfortunately see all around the world, there's a shift towards the right wing happening, also in Germany. The ruling party of the CDU is trying its best to benefit from it, which was also examined during the Solidarity March in Berlin.
We know that on Links Unten there have been leaks about internal chat protocols and a complete list of attendees of the party congress of the AfD. So Links Unten became the enemy of AfD sympathizers. And these are the people that the CDU is trying to gain as voters in the upcoming elections in a few weeks.
And with this mindset, it doesn't matter to the state if the ban of Links Unten will be made illegal later, and that it has no lasting effect on our movement. They rely on the ongoing shift toward the right to secure their power within the state, hoping to quench our resistance, our support in society, and to weaken their competition. But that will not work.
Repression always aims at isolation and intimidation. That's why it is important for us to be in solidarity with each other. It hit a few, but it meant all of us. Which is why we won't be intimidated and we will fight together for a society without exploitation and oppression. Defend left media. We are all in the media. Solidarity.
That's it from us at A-Radio Berlin. If you want to check us out, visit aradio.blogspot.de for more radical audios in English, Spanish and German, and on Twitter at @aradio_Berlin. See you soon for more bad news, and until then, we'd like to express our deep appreciation, thanks, love and solidarity for all you people out there resisting and surviving. Stay strong, take care, and give him hell.
You're listening to Dissident Island
Radio.
Oh, yeah.
www.dissidentisland.org.
Welcome to Dissident Island Radio's fourth edition of Bad News from London Town. This month marked the return of Defence and Security Equipment International Arms Fair, which takes place every 2 years in East London. Delegates from governments across many nations converged on the event, which sees the UK government make deals on the export of some of the world's most deadliest weapons. Just one example of the implications of this trade, this year has seen an increased awareness around exports to Saudi Arabia in particular, the weapons currently being used against the Yemeni people. Mobilisations of protesters campaigning for the arms fair to be stopped or disrupted also converged on the venue over the course of 7 days, which saw 100 people arrested. Groups present included
Campaign Against the Arms Trade,
Trident and Plowshares,
Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament,
Sisters Against the Arms Trade,
Lesbians and Gays Support the Migrants,
North London Food Not Bombs,
Global Justice Now,
Art at the Arms Fair,
War Resisters International,
Peace Pledge Union,
Fellowship of Reconciliation,
East London Against the Arms Fair,
Pax Christi,
Quaker Peace and Social Witness,
and London Palestine Action, amongst others.
Ahead of the demonstrations, we caught up with a member of Campaign Against the Arms Trade.
Could you just briefly introduce CAT to our listeners?
Well, Campaign Against Arms Trade has been around for 40 years now. The reason it was founded was because the UK government was putting increasing resources into selling weapons around the world. And right from the start, that's meant arms exports to brutal repressive regimes. Since then, CAT has grown, but unfortunately so have the problems we've come up against. And the UK is now one of the largest arms exporters in the world. So we try to mobilise as many people as we can, in as many ways as we can, to show opposition to what's happening, to draw attention to the devastating impact these arms sales can have, and to mobilise people against terrible atrocities like the DSEI arms fair, which is coming to London next.
There's many problems to do with the arms industry, but one of them is the way that they have great power to influence public policy. Could you describe to our listeners how arms companies undermine democracy, transparency and social justice in the UK?
Well, the arms companies have always benefited from secrecy and have benefited from agreements that can happen behind closed doors. We've done as much as we can to shed some transparency on these practices. If any of your listeners want to go onto our website, caat.org.uk, we've got a browser on there where you can click on an arms company and find out a whole list of meetings they've had with civil servants and government ministers. It kind of exposes the complicity and the close-knit nature of that relationship. In terms of how it works, there's always been a really strong revolving door, which is gone between the corridors of power in Whitehall and the corridors of the arms company headquarters as well. So there's always been that kind of regular turn from top-ranking civil servants and government ministers to former defence ministers who've gone on to work for arms companies. Now, Saudi Arabia has been for decades now by far the largest buyer of UK arms anywhere in the world. It buys billions of pounds worth of fighter jets and bombs from the UK regularly, and there's negotiations for another round of fighter jet sales. Like, all the arms sales to Saudi Arabia have only served to empower the regime, and this is a regime which has one of the worst human rights records in the entire world. But it's not just in Saudi Arabia. Take the last few months, for example, where Theresa May started January with a visit to Turkey at the same time as Erdogan's been overseeing massive crackdown on dissenting voices in Turkey. While Turkey's been heading in a more increasingly authoritarian direction, its relationship with the UK has only got stronger. By the time Theresa May left her visit, she'd signed off on a £100 million fighter jet deal. Now, with that deal having just been cemented and having just been signed off on, I think that that makes the chances of Theresa May speaking up against human rights abuses in Turkey in the future far less likely, now that there's lots of weaponry tied up in this deal. It makes it far less likely that the UK would do anything to promote human rights or democracy in Turkey, because it puts the power and relationship in the hands of the Turkish government.
This is The Final Straw Radio, and you're listening to Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World.
This month, we're sharing a conversation with Asada, an activist and member of Yellowhammer Alternative, an Alabama-based far-left autonomous mutual aid group. Hey there, can you introduce yourself, where you're from, and if you work with any groups you affiliate with that you want to name?
My name is Asada, and I'm from Mobile, Alabama, and I run the Yellowhammer Alternative.
And what can you tell us about autonomous relief efforts around Hurricane Harvey in the southern so-called U.S.?
I run Food Not Bombs with my partner here in Mobile, and so we connected with Houston's Food Not Bombs. And through that, we found several other organizations that were trying to do grassroots work there. And so there were four groups that we worked with directly, and we were there for about almost a week on ground. We did Food Not Bomb servings every day, sometimes multiple times throughout the day. Our main focus was for POC communities that weren't receiving like the aid that they necessarily needed. And so that was where our focus was in terms of helping. So we did servings in those areas, which also turned into a lot of cop watch and ICE watch because people were being detained. We did a lot of fundraising and stuff beforehand. So it was kind of a situation where people knew who we were. And so if there was an immediate need that they had, we were able to go out and actually do that and serve those people directly.
And what kind of skills and resources have been showing up, and what sort of needs do you see still existing?
In terms of needs that we already had there, which I thought was really amazing because I hadn't had that type of experience on a larger scale like this, were people that were willing to help by any means necessary. So there were a lot of situations where we weren't allowed certain places to give aid, or certain people that weren't allowed to receive aid from like larger organizations and things like that. And we were fortunate enough with the group that we were with that we were willing to help them by any means necessary. So I think that was a great resource to have. And then also that there were so many different leftist type groups that were willing to work together so that we can have a larger pool in terms of pulling resources and people that were able to help. What I personally felt was lacking, and which I'm trying to work on now for future efforts, was we had a great amount of people that were actually on the ground in Houston and able to assist that way. But there were not a lot of people that weren't there that could do things like answering emails and mapping things and keeping things in order and like organizing on that end. So it was a lot of stuff that we would have to pull away from people on the ground so we could monitor things like that. And so I think that's something that we should definitely work on and like push for people to actually volunteer with us remotely.
How could someone who's interested in getting involved in that sort of thing get involved? Where can they find out more about where to plug in?
Well, one of my main focuses with running Yellowhammer Alternative is to connect people with different organizations that are in need. And so specifically, like we're working on like relief for Armor right now. And so like we've started a Facebook group through our page where like we're posting stuff at least several times an hour all day about different organizations that need specific help. The name of the organization is the Yellowhammer Alternative. And so that's our name on Facebook and the URL as well.
So as we're speaking, Hurricane Irma has been ripping through the Caribbean, upsetting human communities in the Bahamas, Cuba, Haiti, Puerto Rico, and elsewhere in the sea, and is heading towards the eastern Gulf states. Can you talk a bit about the emergency response work you hear gearing up for the storm system and possibly for Hurricane Jose in Irma's wake?
We have not started prepping for Jose, like, at all. And so I'm actually kind of nervous about that. But in terms of Irma, we actually started doing prep for it on Monday of this week, just because like one important thing that I learned in Houston from a lot of people that we were helping actually had a family. The grandmother ended up telling us about how there was no way to be too prepared for storms like this. And so we wanted to go ahead and start as early as possible in terms of gathering funds and gathering resources and people and stuff that could help with that. And we started reaching out to other autonomous groups like in all throughout Florida that are willing to work with us and help us. And like we've set up the fundraising page for it. And so we've been circulating that. Our main focus today was on media. And so we've been reaching out to different media outlets to let them know that we exist and that this is an option for people to be able to aid directly to the people that actually need the help instead of going through larger organizations that actually aren't helping the people that are most at risk.
Yeah, it seems like a critique in the past of those larger organizations is that they don't have the networking on the ground and the trust of the communities, and also that there's a high administrative cost to their functioning. Is that something that you've heard people in your region, especially that's been hit so hard by hurricanes over the years, experiencing or expressing?
Definitely. I mean, even from me, like my personal experience, because like we lost everything in Katrina, and we learned that like a lot of the major organizations, as Red Cross and like things like that, like they weren't specifically helping the people in the community. A lot of it is the administration cost, and then a lot of it is that they're so out of touch with the actual areas, but they don't know what people need and what areas are most affected. Because even with Houston, while we were there, there were a lot of areas and stuff like outside of Houston that we were able to work with and help where the people hadn't received any aid at all, because like Red Cross and places like that didn't even come to those areas. And it was generally very, very poor POC, like communities and stuff that weren't receiving any aid.
Can you talk about what mutual aid organizing as opposed to charity looks like in these sort of circumstances?
Well, I think there's several things. Like, for one thing too, like we particularly worked with a lot of indigenous communities that were undocumented. And so these people, because there were major corporations, they were afraid if it was even an option for them to reach out to them, like if they were to reach out and get help and aid like that, because particularly at the shelters, like they're checking IDs, which a lot of these people don't have. So it's the concept of like, you want to receive help, like you need to prove that like you're documented. And if you're not, then like you're going to be detained and like different things like that. So I think that's where one thing I really stress with our organizing for Irma is that we can't depend on the state. That it's kind of, we're at a point where like it's up to us as a community to reach out and help these people.
There was a leaked memo or leaked information basically that came out just a few days ago about so-called Operation Mega, and that the Trump administration was going to order ICE to do sweeps around the country targeting, I think it said 8,000 people, but of course there's huge amounts of people that are arrested, you know, quote, incidentally to those. And ostensibly they've said that they're retracting that for now because it would be inappropriate to be timed at the same time as the hurricane. But it's incredible, and it really seems to bring to light the position of government as being the enemy of community.
I personally don't believe, and a lot of people that I'm working with, that is something that's on hold. And so that's our biggest fear right now, is that people having to worry about their lives in terms of like the hurricane and like losing everything. And also on top of that, having to worry about them being detained and taking away and things like that. Our main focus is going to be right now is particularly protecting those undocumented communities.
So I assume that you aren't a climate scientist, but I wonder if you can say anything about the need for this sort of community response in the age of increased chaos produced by anthropogenic climate change.
I know, like with Harvey and then like with Irma coming right afterwards, there was all these like news reports on like major publications about how like this is a once in every 500 years type storm. Like this isn't like a normal thing or whatever. And I think that language and that rhetoric needs to change, because when you have a once in 500 year storm, like we have two of them happening in a matter of like a week, like it's important that we start recognizing and acknowledging the fact that climate change is very real. And then when you have situations specifically like with hurricanes that like, I mean, no, so like I'm not a climate scientist, so I don't like understand and like know a lot of it, but just basic science of that, warmer weathers produce more intense storms in terms of like hurricanes. And I generally, there's no really denying that the oceans and stuff are getting warmer. So like we at least have like that acknowledgement. And so I think with stuff like that, or like, which I'm kind of hoping, like with these storms and stuff happening, that ends up changing that conversation where people are recognizing how real climate change is and that what we are actually doing as people to contribute to that. And so that's the other part of like what we're working on and stuff, like the prep and stuff for Irma. And then now even like in the wake of like Harvey, is putting out more information about that, so people can have an understanding of what exactly is going on and like how we can essentially try to stop this or slow it down as much as possible.
Well, Sada, thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for taking the time to talk to me.
No problem.
More from our radio can be found at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. More about Asada's group can be found at theyellowhammeralternative.com, and you can make donations to theirs and others' efforts in the Gulf at ucaring.com/theyellowhammeralternative -940603.
the state and the big enterprises kill. Mapuche, forests, women, ocean, children, lakes, pools, rivers, our bodies, our dreams, our cultures, kill our future.
Mapuche, forests, women, ocean, children, lakes, pools, our bodies, our dreams, our cultures, kills our future.
Our king hall is standing in trouble and mate. Our king hall is standing, it just can't be. Well, you don't know how big about the view.
This is the end of Bad News, number 4. Angry voices from around the world. We hope you enjoy and listen to the next issue. And also we hope that this bad news make you angry enough to go to the streets and destroy capitalism. Thank you very much.
I just can't be. Well, you don't.